facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome. It is Thursday, January the 6th. It's the feast day of St. Andre Beset. What a cool saint he is. An amazing modern-day saint of miracles. We're going to talk more about his life in just a little while. But you're going to want to call in right now, 888-914-9149. That's a toll-free line to call to talk to me for free on the Cale Clark Show, 888-914-9149. You can also tweet at me. My Twitter handle is at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E. You can give me a follow there. And there's also the show account, too, at Cale Clark Show. And the email address is Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. And I did get a great listener email, which I'll share with you in just a minute. And it really does tie into the first story that I'm going to talk about today. You probably heard about it already. It's gone pretty viral. Pope Francis has engaged in what I might call some dogmatic theology. I know. I work really hard on these. But CNN, among many other outlets, were reporting that yesterday, during a general audience talk that the Pope generally does give on Wednesdays, the general audience, he talked about the fact that, in his words, opting for pets over children takes away our humanity. We've all heard of people who have what they call their fur babies. And listen, I'm a dog owner too. I love dogs. Absolutely think they're great. Not a cat person. Apologies to any cat lovers out there. Hey, your cat doesn't even like you. You know, when you come home at the end of the day, your cat runs away and hides under the bed. But your dog, he loves you. He can't wait to see you. He just absolutely is all over you. So this is an interesting question that the Pope raises. It's certainly ruffled a lot of fur, I guess you could say. The fur is flying. Do all dog parents go to heaven? I don't know if that's the case, if they remain in this absolute state of selfishness here. And a little tongue-in-cheek here, but this is what happened. The Pope made these comments on Wednesday at the general audience. He was actually talking about St. Joseph, Jesus' earthly father, his foster father. And as Pope Francis is wont to do, he tends to go off script a little bit. He's very extemporaneous in his approach. Very often he'll have a prepared text, but then as the Spirit moves him, he might decide to talk about something else. And that's what happened. Well, he was talking about St. Joseph and how he brought up Jesus as, quote, among the highest forms of love, the way that he did that. And then he kind of went off into the topic of adoption and children who are orphans. And this is a great point to raise. And I'll tell you what he said about that in just a minute. But he also focused on couples that willingly decide, I'm not going to have children, but we're going to simply have fur babies, just going to have animals. And this is what the Pope said, and I quote, "We see that people do not want to have children, or just one and no more. And many, many couples do not have children because they do not want to, or they have just one." Now, by the way, he's not talking about couples who obviously are experiencing infertility through, they do desire to have children of their own, and they just aren't able to. He says, many couples do not have children because they do not want to, or they have just one, but they have two dogs, two cats. Yes, dogs and cats take the place of children, said the Pope. Quote, yes, it's funny, I understand, but it is the reality. And this denial of fatherhood or motherhood diminishes us. It takes away our humanity. And in this way, civilization becomes aged and without humanity because it loses the richness of fatherhood and motherhood. And our homeland suffers as it does not have children. End of quote. And I think that last little remark, he's probably talking about how birth rates have plummeted in Europe, and they are in North America as well. In many places, they've fallen below replacement levels. That creates a lot of problems in society. People who say that the world is overpopulated don't often take this into account. I think I heard recently that, if I'm correct, I believe it's Singapore that is actually now paying people to have children because the tax burden will not, it's structurally, society will almost fall apart financially unless a new generation is born that can handle society's debts, to help finance the tax situation, all that stuff. And anyways, as you can imagine, the internet had a field day with this. A lot of people attacked Pope Francis about this. The absolute, you know, what does an old celibate man in Rome know about having children? Anyways, you can imagine the things that would be said. And there were far worse things said than that I'm not going to raise here on this program because it's a family show. But he did say this. He did say this. Francis did really encourage adoption as an option for couples who cannot have their own biological children. He says, quote, "How many children in the world are waiting for someone to take care of them?" Francis said. "Having a child is always a risk, either naturally or by adoption, but it is riskier not to have them. It is riskier to deny fatherhood or to deny motherhood, be it real or spiritual," end of quote. I'm going to get into that in a little bit. Is it even possible to deny fatherhood or motherhood? And this doesn't mean that every male is called to marriage and actually having biological children. And same with females, they're not necessarily called to be wives and mothers, but they kind of are, in a sense, even if they are following the vocation of celibacy. And I'll talk about that in just a little bit. And he said something very similar, by the way. Pope Francis said something very similar back in 2014, about a year after he was elected pope. And he talked back then about couples in old age, childless couples who choose not to have their own biological children. When they get into their golden years, very often they're anything but golden. They're years of loneliness and bitterness. And he said at that point in 2014, he said these couples were not modeling the fruitfulness that God asks of his church. And this is really intrinsic to marriage. And this brings up the listener question that I wanted to share with you, because it really is apropos to this discussion. Alexia, who's listening to the Cale Clark Show in beautiful San Diego, California, on 1000 AM KCEO, she wrote in to me, and you can write in too, Cale, at relevantradio.com, or you can tweet at me, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E on Twitter. Here's what she wrote, Alexia. She said, "I've had this question in mind, Cale, and I wanted more of an understanding about this. Is it a sin to not want to have children? Is it a sin to not want to have children?" Well, that is a very good question. I don't know, Alexia, if you are married or not, but I would say that if you are married and you don't want to have children, I think that is a problem. And I'll tell you why. Because when you look at the marriage vows in the Catholic Church, that's part of the deal. That's part of the deal. For a marriage to be valid, you know, when they look at annulment cases, annulments are not Catholic divorces. An annulment means there never was a valid marriage in the first place. So all annulment cases want to look at what was happening at the beginning of the marriage. Did the man and woman know what they were agreeing to? And sadly, many people don't. I told you before that I met a guy once who, at a conference, I was giving a talk there, and this person was giving a talk as well. And he's a canon lawyer. And when he started doing, he was working in a marriage tribunal in a large archdiocese. And he said when he got into canon law, and it's not necessarily the most lucrative area of law, that's for sure, but he really had this calling to go into canon law. And he got assigned to this marriage tribunal, and he said, "I am going to clean up this whole annulment situation in the church, because the church grants way too many annulments. People are looking at it as a Catholic divorce. I'm going to fix it." And then he said he actually started looking at the cases, and he said he was appalled. He said, "Man, the church, in some ways, maybe they don't grant enough annulments," because he couldn't believe how many actual legit cases there were where people literally did not know what they were getting into, what they were agreeing to. And they just had poor formation, perhaps a bad marriage prep, whatever the case may be. And so there are four questions that the couple are asked when they are married in the church. And it's the one sacrament you can kind of confer yourself, because the bishop, the priest, or deacon who's there is simply there as a witness on behalf of the church to couples render the sacrament unto each other. And so there are four questions that are asked of the couple. Have you come here freely? Or is your mother-in-law, future mother-in-law, making you do this? It's not a good answer. So love has to be free. Can't be coerced. Have you come here freely to give yourselves without reserve to one another? That's the second question. It's a little bit tricky, but really that's another way of saying, is your commitment total? Is your love total? To give yourself without reserve. You're giving yourself totally. Do you promise to be faithful? That's the third question, unto death. And number four, the last one, is will you accept children as a gift from God, and will you raise them according to the laws of Christ and his church? That's the promise to be fruitful. And so that is part of the marriage vows. That's that fourth question. Will you accept children as a gift from God? And by the way, these correspond to exactly the way that Jesus Christ loved his bride, the church. Is his love for us free? He said, no one, in the gospel, he said, no one takes my life from me, but I lay it down of my own free will. It wasn't so much that the Roman soldiers nailed him to the cross that put him there, or that Judas betrayed him. He himself chose this. He laid down his life for us. Is his love total? This is my body, which is given up for you. He gave it all. He gave it all. When his blood dripped into the sand for his bride. Is his love for us faithful? What does he say at the end of the Gospel of Matthew? Matthew 28, I will be with you always unto the very end of the age. So he's always with his bride, the church, and that's especially true in the sacrament of the Eucharist. In every tabernacle, in every Catholic church throughout the world, he makes himself willingly a prisoner for us to keep his presence with us in that special way. And then finally, is his love for the church fruitful? Absolutely. He said in John chapter 10, verse 10, I have come that you might have life and have it to the full. This is the abundant life that he promises us. Jesus said the thief, he was talking about the devil, he says the thief only comes to steal, kill, and destroy, but I have come that you might have life and have it to the full. So his union with the church, his bride, brings about life. And every time someone is born again, through water and the Holy Spirit, and by that, of course, we mean the sacrament of baptism. Jesus says you must be born again. And throughout the history of the church, that was always interpreted, this conversation that Jesus has in John chapter 3, that's where these words come from, between he and Nicodemus, that was always interpreted historically as a reference to baptism. It was only after the Protestant Reformation that people started saying, it doesn't really refer to a sacramental baptism. But all of us who have been born again of water and the Holy Spirit, we've been born super, of course, we're born naturally once through our human parents. We're born supernaturally into the church through baptism. And how many billions of us, literally, are children of God through baptism? So that it is intrinsic to marriage. It is intrinsic to marriage, to answer your question, Alexia. And here's what the Catechism says about this. Don't take my word for it. This is what the Catechism says about this in the section on marriage. And you can look at paragraph 1652. So whenever you see the citation CCC 1652, it means the Catechism of the Catholic Church, paragraph 1652. It says, by its very nature, the institution of marriage and married love is ordered to the procreation and education of the offspring, and it is in them that it finds its crowning glory. It says, children are the supreme gift of marriage and contribute greatly to the good of the parents themselves. God himself said, it is not good that man should be alone. And from the beginning, he made them male and female, wishing to associate them in a special way in his own creative work. God blessed man and woman with the words, be fruitful and multiply. And right there, actually, the Catechism is quoting the very first command that God ever gave humanity in the Garden of Eden. Before the Ten Commandments, it was be fruitful and multiply. So it says, hence, true married love and the whole structure of family life, which results from it, without diminishment of the other ends of marriage, are directed to disposing the spouses to cooperate valiantly with the love of the Creator and Savior, who through them will increase and enrich his family from day to day. So the Catechism does say there are other ends of marriage, of course, companionship. And there's even another end to sexuality other than procreation, but I'll get into that in just a second. There's all that stuff, but this is how we cooperate with the Creator. He makes use of us to bring more souls into the world, enrich his family. There's basically two ways that the church can grow. There's two ways to become a Christian. You can either be born into the church, and of course you got to ratify that choice that your parents made for you as you get older. That's kind of what confirmation is all about, in a certain sense, becoming an adult in the faith, say, I God has no grandchildren. I have to accept this for myself. But the other way to get into the church, obviously, is to be a convert. And many of you listening today are converts. I reverted to the Catholic Church. I left the church, came back. That's difficult. It involves a long and winding road in a lot of cases. It's a lot easier to be born into it in a certain sense than to be converted. And I think you guys can probably attest to that if you're converts. And so this is one of the ways that married couples serve the Church of God, by providing more Christians, more Catholics. And so it is an intrinsic part of marriage. And I remember I spoke at a conference alongside Janet Smith. And you guys probably know Professor Janet Smith. She teaches at Sacred Heart Major Seminary in Detroit. She's very well known for her books and also a very famous talk that she gave called Contraception, Why Not? And in that talk, she talks about the two B's, and I remember listening to her at this conference give this actual presentation. And one of the things that she says is that, and this is a quote from Janet Smith, sex is for babies and for bonding. Now, she's presuming this is within marriage, of course. If people are not ready for babies or bonding, they ought not to be engaging in acts of intercourse. Our society has lost sight of the fundamental truth that if you are not ready for babies, you're not ready for sexual intercourse, end of quote. And so that's what she calls the two B's, right? Sexuality within marriage is about the two B's, babies and bonding. First of all, of course, reproduction. They're called your reproductive organs for a reason, folks. I don't want to get too deep into it, but all the other stuff, like the feeling close to your partner and all that sort of stuff, that's a part of it for sure. And God has attached that to the gift of sexuality in marriage, but you can't separate the two. You can't drive a wedge between those two B's. You know, what God has joined together, human beings must not separate. And so if you're going to enter the holy temple of sexuality within marriage, you've got to be open to the gift of life. Now, there are obviously natural times in a woman's cycle where she's not fertile, and that's a different ballgame whatsoever. And of course, the church does teach something called NFA or NFP, Natural Fertility Awareness, or Natural Family Planning. It's called by a couple different names. And this is not contraception. It's a totally different thing. The church does teach, for serious reasons, a couple may not be able to have another child at this time. For example, one of you has just found out you have terminal cancer, something like that. But it has to be a very grave reason, a very serious reason. I can't give you a list of what the 10 reasons are, what the grave reasons are. You're going to have to talk about that with your spiritual director. But it has to be a serious reason. It can't be a frivolous reason like, I can't afford another kid. And this is what some of the comments were to the Pope's articles that have been written about the Pope's statements. They don't understand how expensive kids are, blah, 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 blah. Well, it's not about that. It's not about, well, I won't have money for Toronto Maple Leaf season tickets if I have another kid. That would be considered a selfish reason. So this is what the Pope is getting at. It's about selflessness. And as I said earlier, just one more thing I wanted to mention, and this is also reflected in the words of the Pope, that every man in some way, and Chris West talks about this when he wrote about the theology of the body, every man in some way is called to be a husband and a father, even if he's not called to marriage. And it's because of this spousal meaning of the body, the nuptial meaning of the body. When we look at our human bodies, we realize that they don't make sense by themselves. We're meant to be a gift to the other person. That's true even if we're not called to marriage. We're called to skip the sign of earthly marriage and live this vocation of celibacy, because even the celibate male has to unite himself to the bride of Christ, the church, and try to help bring forth spiritual children. And the same is true of women. Every woman, in some sense, is called to be a wife and mother, even if she is not able to have her own physical children. That's part of who she is innately. And so she pledges herself, if she's celibate, to the divine bridegroom and helps bring forth spiritual children. That's why we use titles of mother, sister, brother, father, even for those who don't have their own physical children. So I thought it was, you know, it's a good teachable moment, right? The fact that the Pope has brought this up. And hey, I'm all for pets. I'm for kids and pets, right? I have a dog too, and his name is Egbert. You know about him. But obviously the default position, of course, is that you are open to the gift of life. You're looking forward to that. That's part of the deal. And I would say, yeah, if you know going into it that you don't want to have children, that's not your intent, then marriage in the church, it's not for you. And that's it. So you probably are going to have some reactions to that. So you might want to call in 888-914-9149. It's a toll-free line to call. Talk to me on the Cale Clark Show. We'll be right back after this. Are you tired of educational options that are one size fits all? Our sponsor, Colby Academy, offers the flexibility of both accredited online and traditional school at-home options to fit the needs of your child. Visit relevantradio.com/Colby.
This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the program. If you missed the first segment, you can always check the podcast later on. It's one of the great things about our shows. They are available in different formats. You can listen live, of course, on the Relevant Radio app, on the radio, on the internet, wherever you might be at relevantradio.com. Or you can always download the podcast later. You can share it with a friend. And we talked before the break about comments that Pope Francis made, a little dogmatic theology there, talking about how some couples, they don't want to have human children. They just want to have fur babies. And of course, people are giving them a hard time about this. And I think it's a little bit unfair. I want to hear what you think. We're going to go to the phones right now. Lucia is calling from Mount Prospect, Illinois. Hello. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Cale. I wanted to reiterate what you said. Great point that when we agree to Catholic marriage, we agree to accept the children that God sends us. But I also wanted to add to the woman, if she's already married, not to underestimate God's generosity. Mm. When we accept children, especially like myself, I got married a little bit older, mm-hmm. professional woman. I did not feel I had motherly instincts or would be a very good mom, to be perfectly honest, especially with young children. I had worked with high schoolers and older kids. But in accepting the children that God gives you, He will fill your heart with the love necessary. In that sacrament of marriage, as you know, we receive all the graces to get through everything that the world will toss at us, including all the heartache and headache and beautiful love that comes in raising a family. Yeah. So not to be afraid. If God calls her to marriage, I'm sure she will do a phenomenal, I'm sorry, to motherhood. I'm sure she'll be a fabulous mother. I now have 9 children, and people often say,
"Wow,
oh, you must love kids." Well, I love my kids. Isn't that why I have these children? So there's a lot of fear involved. There's a lot of the world telling you, you know, it's going to disrupt everything, countless things that will change, all of which is true, but so will that love within your heart. So will even the desire to have more, frankly. Wow. You know, if she's already married, to just have faith that that will all come.
Wow, those are beautiful words. I appreciate that so much. By the way, do you pronounce your name Lucia or Lucia?
Lucia.
Lucia. Okay, all right. So you never know, right? So I took a stab at it, but I do appreciate those fine words. And yeah, it's a matter of trust, right? And as Jesus said to Saint Faustina, the Divine Mercy devotion, Jesus said that wounds of distrust hurt me the most. And when he calls us to a specific vocation, whether it's vocation to the priesthood or religious life or celibacy for the sake of the kingdom, not necessarily in a religious vocation or marriage, whatever that may be, he's asking us to really trust him with the whole enchilada. And we don't know what's coming down the road. That's part of the trust. And knowing that, as you said, Lucia, that he's going to give you the grace for everything that's going to, he'll be there when you need him. He'll be there when you need him. All the challenges that you can't see coming down the road. And I think it's a lot like what Jesus said to the apostles before he went to the cross in the gospel when he said, "I have many more things to say to you, but you cannot bear them now." I think if they had known what was coming down the road, if Peter would have known, "Man, I'm going to be crucified upside down one day. No thanks. I'm just going to run right now, and I'm not coming back. When you get crucified, I'm gone. I'm out of here. I'm on the next boat out of town." And so, I think that it's a grace that we don't know what's coming. In the future, God gives us the grace for today. That's another important point too. And we spend a lot of time worrying about the future. I'm kind of on a tangent right now, as you can see, Lucia, but we spend a lot of time worrying about the future or ruminating about the past, which we can't change. Future's not here yet. God gives us the grace for the moment. That's why it's called the present. It's a gift, Okay, that's a bad homily right there, but you get the point. You get the point. And I think it's true. For people who are married, who are called to the vocation of marriage, if God had revealed to them everything was going to come down the road, they might not have gone through with it. But this is it. He's called us to this, and he's going to bring about his plan through it. And I think it's a marvelous example of generosity, you and your large family. And I think it's a great witness to the world. It's a great witness to the world. So thank you very much for calling, Lucia, and call back anytime. And if you want to call in, if you're listening right now, 888-914-9149 is the number to call. I want to get into something else today too. Today is the feast day of Saint Andre Bessette, Brother Andre. Now you've heard Father Rocky, the CEO of Relevant Radio, talk about this a lot because every year he makes a pilgrimage to the Oratory of Saint Joseph, the Shrine of Saint Joseph in Montreal, where Brother Andre really—that was the house that Brother Andre built, really—and Father Rocky goes there every year to ask for the intercession of Saint Joseph for Relevant Radio. And the story of Brother Andre, if you don't know much about him, he's really called God's doorkeeper, an incredibly humble guy that God used to do powerful works in the world. Now, he was canonized on October the 17th in 2010. And there's a great article on Catholicism.org by a guy who's really, Brother Andre is really his namesake. He's a religious brother named Brother Andre Marie. And if you've ever been to Mount Royal in Montreal, in Quebec, in Canada, the Oratory of Saint Joseph is absolutely massive. It's staggering how large this church is. It's 361 feet high. That's taller than Saint Patrick's Cathedral in New York City. It's also bigger than Notre Dame in Paris, before, of course, the great fire that did so much damage to that church just a little while ago. And in fact, it's so big that St. Paul's in London could actually fit inside of St. Joseph's Oratory on Mount Royal in Montreal. And it's really a beautiful tribute. And if you ask anybody in Montreal who built this church, everyone would tell you Brother Andre. But you'll never find that in the official records of the building or anything like that. He was the porter. He was literally the doorman. He opened the door for people. It's like that psalm that says, "I'd rather be the doorkeeper in the house of my God than to live in the tents of the wicked." That's exactly what Brother Andre was, just a humble guy who worked the door. And he was very small in stature, but he was really a spiritual giant. He wasn't a priest. He couldn't offer masses. He couldn't preach. He didn't even know how to read or write until he was 25 years old. Well, he was born in 1845 on August the 9th. And his parents' names were Isaac and Clotilde Bessette. And he was the eighth of 12 children that this couple had. And they were very poor French-Canadian family. They lived in the village of St. Grégoire, which was a farming community. It was about 30 miles away from Montreal and about 30 miles away from the border of the United States. And Brother Andre's parents were extremely devout, and they really gave him a great example of prayer and hard work. And when he was born, by the way, he wasn't always called Brother Andre. His birth name was Alfred Bisset. And he was really sick as an infant. In fact, his father, out of an emergency situation, baptized him himself right after he was born because it didn't look very good that he would actually survive. And he was weak and sickly throughout his entire life. He had a lot of health problems, despite the fact that he lived to the ripe old age of 91. But he used to reminisce about how happy his childhood years were for him, especially his relationship with his mom was so important. She had really a special affection for him because I think all moms do for the child that's the weakest, and he was definitely the most frail child that she had. But unfortunately, great tragedy struck the family when Brother Andre was 6 years old. His father was killed in a work accident, in a lumbering accident. And 4 years later, his mother, who at the time was trying to raise 12 children all by herself, she caught tuberculosis, which was very often in those days a death sentence. And she had to tragically put her children up for adoption. She only kept with her most feeble child, who was Brother Andre, who at the time, of course, was Alfred. And so Brother Andre and his mom went to live with his aunt. But tragically, in 1857, 2 years later, his mother passed away. And so this is what she said. She had all her children brought from their adoptive homes to her bedside as she was dying. And this is what she said to them, Brother Andre's mother. She said, "My dear little ones, it has been 6 years since your papa left us to go to heaven. The good God is coming to look for me now in my turn. Pray for me. Do not forget the tomb of your father. My body will repose beside his in the cemetery, but from the height of heaven, I will watch over you." And Brother Andre always used to say that he always felt that she was in heaven, that he didn't even necessarily feel the need to pray for the repose of her soul. He said, "I very rarely pray for her, but very often I pray to her." And so he may have had some insight there as to her eternal whereabouts. But he was only 12 years old when his mother passed away. He was, of course, an orphan at that point. But in the next 10 years of his life, he really got a crash course in sainthood. That's really where his spiritual life caught fire. And he tried everything. He tried to work on a family farm, but he was so weak. He just couldn't keep up with all the hard labor of working on a farm, didn't have the stamina for the chores. So then he tried to be a shoemaker. And that didn't work either because he was really clumsy and he constantly cut open his fingers with the tool that the cobbler would use, known as an awl, A-W-L is how it's spelled. And so he tried as much as he could, but he was always just not a great worker at these physical tasks, and he was always in bad health. So what was he going to do with himself? That was a big, big question for him. But the good news is that despite how weak he was on the outside, his inner strength was exceptional. Absolutely exceptional. And in fact, during the canonization proceedings in Rome, as they were investigating the cause of his sainthood, some words of one of his sisters came up. And she said this. She said, "If you only knew my brother in his youth, because every Sunday he would spend the entire afternoon in the church praying." And that might not seem that remarkable, but you got to think about this. Sunday was probably the only day that he had no chores. It was the only time he had to play with other kids or anything like that. But he chose willingly to stay in prayer before the tabernacle for the whole afternoon. That's really heroic holiness in a child. And even when he was a young man, he used to practice some pretty severe penances. And I wouldn't recommend this for anybody unless you really check with your spiritual director. But actually his aunt, who he was staying with at the time, had to take away his mortifications. He had this leather belt that he pierced with tacks, and he would wear that and kind of like dig into him. And he would sleep on the floor. And his aunt had to say, "You can't do that because you're in bad shape health wise, and this is not very good. So please don't do this." And he actually said, "Okay." He didn't disobey his aunt. And he said, "Okay, I'm not going to do that." So he would not do those penances, but he would pick up other penances and not tell her about them. And that's what he used to do. He used to have penance, prayer, And every spare minute, he would be in the church in the presence of the Blessed Sacrament. And so one thing led to another. He eventually joined the Congregation of the Holy Cross. And because he was illiterate at the time, a lot of people did not want to accept him. But he threw himself at the feet of the priest who was in charge of this this organization, and he just begged for admission. And he said, I don't know if they're going to accept me. But the bishop said, yeah, don't be afraid, child. You will be admitted to the religious profession. Don't worry. Because Brother Andre had said to him, my only ambition is to serve God in the most obscure tasks. He did not want any fame or glory for himself. But one of the things he did is, as a religious novice, he would actually memorize. He learned how to read, which was awesome. And then that enabled him to read and memorize the Holy Scriptures, spiritual books like The Imitation of Christ, The Lives of the Saints. In fact, he had to memorize the entire Sermon on the Mount, but he didn't stop there. He memorized all the passion narratives in the Gospels, and he could call them to mind whenever he wanted. That's a good example for us, too. That's a great reason to read the Bible frequently, because we can recall these passages. And as St. Jose Maria Escrivá said, we need to have the life of Christ playing almost like a movie in our minds. But anyway, so his first assignment as a religious brother was to be the doorkeeper at the College of Notre Dame in Côte des Neiges. And he spent his novitiate there, and there was never a time when he was without the cross. His religious superior wasn't very impressed with him at the time, but Brother Andre was called the lightning rod of the college because this bishop would always give him like the worst tasks ever. And Brother Andre didn't care. He would just unite his sufferings to Christ. He wouldn't complain. He wouldn't waste his time complaining about all these things. But this is really when the miracles started to happen in his life. There's some stupendous miracles that God did through Brother Andre. And it really was reminiscent in many ways of the life of our Lord himself. And so remember when the disciples of St. John went to Jesus? John was in prison, and John sends them to Jesus with this question, are you the one who is to come, or should we expect another? And Jesus didn't answer the question directly. He just said, go tell John what you hear and see. And he healed a bunch of people, healed the blind, the cripples, raised the dead. Now go tell John what you saw. And that's exactly what happened with Brother Andre. Brother Andre was used by God to do a lot of physical miracles, which really confirmed the gospel. So here's one example. One day as he was scrubbing the floor, one of the menial tasks that he loved, he was scrubbing the floor in the parlor of the College of Notre Dame. A lady came to see him. She'd heard about him. She'd heard he was a very holy man. Her rheumatism was so bad, she couldn't even walk without two men supporting her, like one holding each arm. And she said, I'm suffering. I want you to heal me. And Brother Andre didn't even look up at her. He just kept scrubbing the floor. And he just said to the men that were helping her, let her go. She can walk home now. And that's exactly what happened. She walked out under her own power. And he said, well, that may not be that impressive, but it really was. But there was even more things happened. One day, there was a guest who came to see him. And Brother Andre noticed that this guy seemed very, very preoccupied and worried just by his facial expression. And he learned that this guy was looking worried for a good reason, because his wife was very sick. And so he told him, Brother Andre said, she is not as sick as you think. At this very moment, she has actually become better. And the guy was like, what are you talking about? Because his wife was really, really sick for a very, very long time. But sure enough, when he got home, his wife opened the door and greeted him, perfectly healthy, and saying, how are you? How are the kids? How's everything? And he learned later on, this guy, that at the exact moment the Brother Andre had said, your wife is not as sick as you think. In fact, at this very moment, she's become better. He learned after asking his wife's nurse, and she'd been bedridden for a long time, that the woman got out of bed exactly at that same moment that Brother Andre said those words. Kind of gives you the chills, doesn't it? It's incredible. And here's another event that really sounds like something right out of the Gospels. One day, Brother Andre was going along Bienville Street in Montreal. There was a sick woman that was brought to him, And as soon as people saw this, all people who were sick in the neighborhood came out of the woodwork, men, women, and children. The whole street was filled with the sick and the infirm, and Brother Andre healed all of them. And they finally had to get him out of there. His driver took him away, and the driver said, "How wonderful. It's like a scene from the life of our Lord. Everyone has come forth to beg for cures. They all got healed." And Brother Andre said, "Well, perhaps so, but God is surely making use of a very, very vile instrument." He had very low regard for himself. He had the highest regard for God. All right, we're going to come back in just a moment. Got to take a quick break here on The Faith Explained. Or not The Faith, that's my other show. Listen to that one too. I get confused sometimes. It's The Cale Clark Show. That's the one. 888-914-9149. Be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Helping you keep your mind off traffic and on the more important things in life. It's Cale Clark on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back to the program. Before the break, we were talking a little bit about Brother Andre, St. Andre Bisset of Montreal. And he always had such a great devotion to St. Joseph, and he was so instrumental in all the miracles that took place to get the Oratory of St. Joseph built on Mount Royal, Montreal, one of the most famous churches in the world. It's a great place to make a pilgrimage to if you can. And one of the things that he did was one day he was walking on Mount Royal with a companion, and he actually buried a medal of St. Joseph there. And he said, "One day we will build a shrine in honor of St. Joseph on this place." And it seemed impossible by human means, but it did happen. It did happen, and so many miracles took place. But he and obviously God did a lot of miracles through the life of Brother Andre too, which we were talking about before the break. And he gave all the credit to the intercession of St. Joseph. In fact, anytime anybody tried to credit Brother Andre personally for any of these miracles, he got really, really angry. He was normally very kind, very placid. But one day, actually Brother Andre was pretty sick at the time, as he often was. He was in bed, and someone who was visiting said to him, "You are better than St. Joseph. We pray to St. Joseph and nothing happens, but when we come to see you, we are cured." Well, Brother Andre was so incensed at this that he screamed at this guy, "Get out of here! It is through St. Joseph's intercession that you are cured, not through me. Get out! Throw him out! Throw him out!" And in fact, he got so worked up by this, Brother Andre, that he had to spend an additional 3 days in bed. He got even more sick yelling at this guy. So that's what he did. He wanted to put the credit where credit was due, and that's part of his personal holiness. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 888-914-9149. We're going to go to the phones right now. Aaron is calling from Hastings, Michigan. Hello, Aaron.
Hi. I actually had a question that's kind of off topic, but
okay.
I'm actually looking to try to tell people that I am coming back to the Catholic Church.
Wow.
How would I go about doing that?
Well, first of all, welcome home. I think it's a great idea. So have you actually come back into the Catholic Church in the sense that you've been away for how long have you been away for, Aaron?
About a month or two. I've been going on and off, but it's okay. More like I just can't shake this feeling that like the Catholic Church is where I'm supposed to be at.
Yeah, absolutely. So you are Catholic, you just, I guess, haven't been going to Mass, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I've actually been going to a Baptist church, and it's just one of those kind of things where I'm just more like, okay, how do I explain this to people that's not Catholic?
Yeah, so you made some new Baptist friends, and they'll be like, "Where are you going? You can't go back there." Well, yeah, you're right.
Obviously,
you're correct. The Catholic Church is the church founded by Jesus. And yeah, you do need to go back. So the thing to do would be, first of all, just to make a good confession, to find a priest, make an appointment, or go to a place where there's confession time set up and just confess that you've been attending, you know, services at a non-Catholic organizations, and you want to come back. Obviously, you've missed Mass on Sundays, holy days of obligation. So make a good confession. And the great thing about being Catholic is that you're one good confession away from being right back in the game. So do that. And I would just say, be forthright. Be very honest with these people. And it might have the effect of one day maybe they might be drawn to the church as well. So try to keep relationships, friendships with them. But certainly don't be ashamed to tell them about it. And the Catholic Church is for them too, right? It's for all people. That's where Jesus wants everybody to be. So,
right.
Maybe one day they'll join you.
Another question. I'm sorry. Another question I have is, how do I explain the real presence?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. And obviously the place to start would be with the fact that Jesus himself did institute the Eucharist. And that's what he said. This is my body. And I once read a book that there was like 30 different interpretations of what he meant by this is my body. But of course, he only meant one thing. And I think the there's obviously the catechism would explain this really well, that a divine miracle takes place at every Mass. However, I think a great resource that might be good for your friends who are not Catholic would be to look at who I call the most dangerous men in all Christianity, the early fathers of the Church, because a lot of non-Catholic Christians, they really have a desire to go for what they call the purity of the early Church. They want to do Church like the first Christians did it. Well, I would say, look at how the early Christians actually did Church. And the good news is there's a lot of writings that they left behind. The apostolic fathers of the Church. These are guys who took over leadership of the Church after the apostles were martyred. People like Ignatius of Antioch. And in his writings, he was the third bishop of Antioch after Peter. Peter moved on to Rome, of course. And in his writings, you can find them all on the internet, the letters that Ignatius of Antioch wrote on the way to his martyrdom, he talks about Eucharistic realism in his letter to the church at Smyrna, which is a city that's mentioned in the Bible. In the letter to the Smyrnians, chapter 6, he says that the heretics or the false teachers have left the church because they no longer confess the Eucharist to be the body and blood of our Savior, Jesus Christ. The same, and he talks about the same flesh that suffered on the cross for our salvation that the Father raised again on the third day. So he's basically saying that the Eucharistic Jesus is the same Jesus. Jesus gives us his body, blood, soul, and divinity under the appearances of bread and wine. So this Eucharistic realism is not something that was invented later on, centuries later, by the church. It's from the very beginning. It's in John chapter 6, too. Chapter 6 of the Smyrnian letter of St. Ignatius, chapter 6 of John's Gospel. And by the way, St. Ignatius personally knew John the Apostle, so I think he had a pretty good idea of what Jesus talked about when he was teaching on the Eucharist. So in John chapter 6, that's where Jesus talks about my flesh is true food, my blood is true drink. You have to eat my flesh and drink my blood, or you have no life within you. It's Eucharistic realism from the very, very beginning. So I think that's where I would start. I would start there.
Okay, awesome. Well, thank you so much.
Well, yeah, I think it's great that you called in. Thank you very much, Aaron, and God bless you on your journey back home to the Catholic Church. It's great. It's great. You're making an amazing decision there. Definitely the right one. So call anytime. Appreciate that. All right, so let me try to take a call real quick. This is Joe from New Mexico. Hey, Joe, we just got a couple minutes here, so we're gonna have to make this quick. Joe, are you still there? Okay, I think we've lost Joe. Joe has left the building. Joe has left the building. But yeah, that's a great question. And that Aaron asked, and that's a great thing, as I said, Lucas, about being Catholic. We're just one, if we're, you know, in a state of sin, mortal sin, we're just one good confession away from being back in good graces, but we're also one heartbeat away from eternity. That's the scary part. So Let's not play a Russian roulette with our eternal souls, right? Let's get right with God while we have the time. Oh, by the way, yeah, I should probably play this. Do we have time for this, Lucas? All right, okay. Well, I always try to follow my fellow Kales that are out there in the world. Believe it or not, there are a lot of people named Kale, and one of the more impressive ones that's out there right now is a hockey player by the name of Cale Makar. If you're a sports fan, you know this guy plays for the Colorado Avalanche, and he scored an unbelievable goal in a game the other day against the Chicago Blackhawks. Here's the audio.
Going off to Makar. Makar holds in the corner and now along the half-court. Oh, beautiful wheel-around move. Makar shoots and scores!
Okay, you had to see this thing. Obviously, audio doesn't do it justice. Incredible spinorama and a goal. It was unbelievable. And our good friend Christine Roussel from the Catholic News Agency, a good friend of the program, she'll be back very soon this Lent to talk about. She always ranks the best fast food fish sandwiches for us during Lent. She takes the bullet for us. But she tweeted about this goal. She tweeted a video of this goal, and she said, wow, my jaw hit the floor when I saw this. So I responded to her, and I said, hey, his name's Cale. What'd you expect? And she wrote back to me and said, I only expected leafy greens. Ah, she got me again. Christine, Christine, Christine. I always get burned by Christine. But never by you. Thanks for listening today. We'll be back. Lucas produced. Patrick took your calls. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.